If you've been paying attention over the last several weeks, and no harm, no foul of you haven't been, you've been noticing that I've been doing a bit of a series out of the book of James, one after another, of this short pastoral epistle that speaks fairly clearly to very practical elements. And I found it a little bit ironic that the text for this today, if I'm not mistaken, appears nowhere in the Revised Common Lectionary, this cycle of readings that the broader church goes through from week to week over the course of 3 years. In fact, there's not a whole lot written out there about this, because it's a little bit of a tricky one, even though it's one of the most central realities of life in the church. So I think we do well to sit with it, even if it's going to be a little bit messy. And just like we do well to sit with James as a whole, even though it's not always the easiest one to wrap our heads around. The text today comes in James 3, verses 1 through 12. It begins, "Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For all of us who make mistakes, anyone who makes no mistake in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with a bridle. We put bits into our mouths of horses to make them obey us. We guide their whole bodies. Or look at ships. Though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, yet they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great exploits. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire, and the tongue is a fire. A tongue is placed among the members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body. It sets the fire of on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell. For every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be turned and tamed by the human species, but no one can tame the tongue. Restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, it ought not be so. Does the spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives, or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh." As wonderful as it is to have an older sibling, it really should come with a warning label or two. Mainly the one that says, yes, they are your friend, they are your guide, but don't necessarily trust them. At least through, let's say, the age of 18. I remember one incident where that came true. Around 8 or 9, I became aware of, well, there's some words that you can say and it gets a big reaction. I wonder what those words are. So naturally, you go to your older sibling and say, so, fill me in here. What can I say and what can I? And he, of course, saw the opportunity to have more fun than to be helpful and said, tell you what, go say this to Dad. And of course, the only predictable happened. And I sensibly didn't see that he was having the opportunity to laugh. Now, fortunately, Mom and Dad quickly saw that my slip of the tongue was a bit more of a shove, but all the same, it's there. This taught me two important life lessons. One, be careful what you say and why. And two, always be aware of sharing gifts. This is typically how we think about our language, and this is typically how we read this passage in James. While the tongue needs to be bridled by walling off the words that ought not be said. There's a blacklist out there which cannot be used in pleasant company. Even in the current vogue of shading speech with increasing quantities of blue for the value of shock, or whatever reason, there's just some things that you don't say at all times. And rightly so. I wonder how we might have a sermon about four-letter words without the ubiquitous FCC bleep button. And of course, this is a good place to start. There are things that we should just not say, especially where the holy is concerned. And we should always be reverent and considering how we want to be in the world as we speak soberly and sincerely whenever we can. Because how we speak to people determines ultimately how we act with them. And we could do this and we could just throw in some Ten Commandments and that would be good enough. A little pinch of Deuteronomy and you could be well warned against the evils of the tongue. But I think just sort of saying, well, it's the words that give us in trouble, kind of misses the point. And misses James' point, to be sure. Because he's also saying something much more fundamental about what it is to speak and to relate and to be there. The tongue, we acknowledge, is the fount of much knowledge, but also of much evil and suffering. As careful as we may police our vocabularies to ensure that they remain friendly to all ears, there remains the far greater challenge of how do we make sure that all of our speech accomplishes what we mean it to? How do we deal with this dual nature that is identified of, yes, from the same place comes that which nourishes and that which destroys. The salt and the fresh. The challenge and the not. And it's a large balance. And that's why I think we don't often hear this, and we don't often speak of this, even though that we know that it's essential to being people of God. As James writes, look, we can change just about anything that we want, but tongues, not so much. And he gives this advice to people in the way of doing new things. This epistle is written to a new church, probably one that where this was kind of a group letter written to the one to a number of churches that James related to. And where they are is at this difficult moment of translating the passion and power of, yes, we have heard the gospel, we have heard, been moved by the Spirit, we want to do this. to the more ordinary reality of, well, okay, now we need to translate what our world is into what the body is. And that's more and more challenging. And that's why, time and again, James takes on very simple, basic realities of how do you work fairly? How do you treat everyone with dignity? As well as how do we speak when it's so difficult? From the very beginning, he is most blunt. Our speech is, at its best, our finest value, and at its worst, our greatest liability. And there's very little beating around the bush here. The tongue is the fire and the flame, as all the burn sinks down, as well as builds up. And on a basic level, we know that this is true. We know that this is the world and ourselves as we know it. Every last one of us can, no doubt, tell our stories of woe to us when, what was said to us, and what might have not been said at all, but you wanted to hear most of all. And we know that this is part of life, and it's not just that people are mean either. Sometimes the most precisely phrased words can be spoken at the most wrong time for us to hear them in the way that they were intended. And that's not anybody's fault, except to say it happens. It's there. And worse still is the deafening silence that we receive at sometimes our most vulnerable moments. We can want so much to hear the words that we need to hear, and then when nothing is said, we fill in the blanks in the worst possible way. The list goes on, and we know it well, because we know the nature of humanity. It happens wherever two or three are gathered. And there will be offense, and there will be failure here. So we all deal with this challenge of communication. And we know its power and its promise, as well as its peril. But because it has the power for good, because our words and our speech has the power for good, it also has the potential for bad. You don't get one without the other. And if you want to hit something really hard, you get a big hammer. But if you miss, you make a big dent. We know this. And we also know this in our lives too. Any of us who have been in a romantic relationship have probably come to the point of saying I love you needs to be translated into something else entirely of, okay, what does that mean? Where does that go? How does that take us? And where does it go? Which is why that I love you moment is the most terrifying moment that there is. Because it's all out there. That translation from the real into from the hypothetical can be dangerous. So knowing all of this and recognizing that our communication, both spoken and not, has all this potential, what do we do? What do we do when We live in a world where communication is so often even out of sight and out of mind. It's as quick as just, you know, clicking share or like or thumbs up. You don't have to look anybody in the eye. You don't need to see whether they're offended or not. You can just put it out there. Let other people deal with the consequences. That is speech too. Every bit as much as what we might say in front of people or behind people for that matter. Words and the powers that they have for building up and for harm has to be taken seriously. Not just as a mere batting around of ideas and concepts, but as a call to a new identity and a new self reflected by the sense of who we are. Because words shape us. Our speech shapes us. And doing that, I think, starts by simply having a conversation like this and just saying now and again, yeah, it's hard. Of course, we need to be careful. And of course, yes, sometimes we just need to forgive. Because we know that the potentials are there and the pain is there. Words, both the ones that we use and the ones that we revere, shape who we are and shape how we are in the world. And we respond accordingly. The most basic prayer in all of Judaism is the Shema, recited daily. And it recites the single idea of the monotheistic faith. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is God, the Lord alone. And then he goes on to say, you shall love the Lord with all your heart, soul, and mind, and your neighbor as yourself. This is what Jesus was quoting when he was asked for the greatest commandment. And these are the words that shape them and us every day. This is God, and this is how I show love for God. And saying those words by themselves is simple enough. But living those words, after saying them over and over and over again, that is where the challenge is. That's where we do well to always push and strive and build. With this in mind, we're reminded that we do well to speak with each other and about each other in careful ways. Acknowledging that there is God between each one of us. Perhaps we do well to consider actually including more four-letter words in our lives. Words that we avoid less because we find them vulgar or impossible, but also because we simply find them beyond our scope or beyond our capability to know what to do with. They're the complicated words of discipleship. Yet there's power in engaging them. Words like love, fear, honor, not four letters, duty, and many others. We avoid these because, frankly, they're the ones that we don't know what to do with. And we don't know where to go with. But maybe we need to embrace them all the same. When we think of our work less as an obligation to undertake for the sake of pay or out of responsibility, but also simply because we're given the opportunity to be about the business of God in the world, each in our way. What if we spoke about duty? Duty not as an obligation that one takes under the threat of embarrassment or obligation, but rather as the behaviors that we are called to, simply because that's where our allegiance lies and that's where our joy lies. Doing that might help us think differently about practicing Christianity in the world. If we spoke about love, less about the state of one's heart and the emotions surrounding it, but instead as an active demonstration of grace that was once shown us by the very form of God with us, it will absolutely change how we understand who we are and where we are in the world. If we, like the Hebrew prayer, would dare to hear and speak about our challenging four-letter words more often, our hearing them would shape how we embody them, and our embodying them would shape how we then spoke and were and are in there. And that will be a reflection of the ongoing work of God with us, changing us and moving us and healing us, even in our speech, even with our tongues. We need to be doers of our words, and what we say matters. We will all misspeak. We will all say things that we wish we didn't. We will at times let the chance go by to say what we ought. We will hurt others, and we will be hurt by others. None of us are immune to this. But we also owe it to ourselves to keep speaking the best we may, to keep forgiving where forgiveness is needed, and to keep allowing the power of God to reside even in our untamed tongues, that the glory of God might show through. May we speak always of what we most know, that God is love forevermore. Amen. As we aspire to our better selves, let's sing together, Be Thou My Vision. I don't have the number in front of me, 549, in voices together. Let's stand.